Aston Villa boss Unai Emery shuffled his pack for a trip to the champions Manchester City in midweek and got smacked as a result. Perhaps the canny Spaniard did that to maximise the potential of this weekend's home game against Brentford, because a win would take the West Midlands side another big step towards the Champions League. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. We regularly shuffle our pack on this show, but the quality never drops. Of course, Mark O'Hare with us once again, resisting the lure of popular culture to bring you the best bets. Mark, Unai Emery left out Pau Torres, Leon Bailey, Alex Moreno on the bench, Ollie Watkins was injured. Do you believe he had half an eye on this game this weekend?
Yeah, and I wouldn't sort of criticise him for doing that either. You know, you chuck in McGinn's suspension and the illness that Emi Martinez suffered, which meant he was missing as well for the trip to the Etihad. And yeah, there was, I wouldn't say it was quite second string, but it wasn't far off it for Aston Villa at the Etihad. And, you know, it's a busy season and we're now into the business end of the campaign and matches are coming thick and fast. Obviously, the pressure is ramping up too. Villa are only 2 points clear of Spurs, who I think have got a game in hand on them as well. So we still don't know whether it's top four or top five in terms of Champions League qualification. So from Villa and Spurs' perspective, you have to just keep on going, plugging away and trying to seal that top four spot. And then there's no questions asked. But yeah, obviously, this weekend's match against Brentford is much more winnable than a trip to the Etihad, especially with City sort of smarting after being shut out by Arsenal last weekend and desperate to bounce back in terms of the title race. So that was always going to be a very difficult game, but they stayed with them reasonably well in the first 20, 30 minutes. But it's very difficult to stop a player of Phil Foden's quality when he's in the mood like that. So yeah, they've kind of written that one off and they'll start again this weekend. But you know, I've said recently on the show, I opposed Villa last weekend despite the injury absentees in terms of the Wolves camp. I thought Matias Cunha might be back in the squad, but they left him out as well. So they're missing their three stars in forward areas for that trip. But I thought Wolves were very competitive at Villa Park. And whilst the 2-0 scoreline perhaps was a little bit harsh on them, I thought they were very decent and very competitive. And I've had an issue with Villa recently. I said on last week's show that if you look at those Villa matches in the recent games, let's take out the City match where we've just spoken about the Wolves game too. But West Ham, Spurs, Luton, you know, he's done sort of, Unai Emery, this is, he's done some sort of tactical tweaks with his team, made some sort of odd decisions. And look, his tactical acumen and knowledge of his squad is far superior than I could ever even imagine to me. So I will sort of bow to his knowledge and his superior expertise in that field. But I've just thought some of the decisions he's made have been a little bit wrong and perhaps backfired, particularly that Tottenham game where he alternated between a back three and a back four. It just didn't work and he ceded control of the midfield and got overrun, really. But things could be better this weekend with Martinez back, McGinn's back from suspension too, hosting Brentford, who, you know, the performances I think have been pretty good throughout the campaign. They've just had a little bit, you know, of bad luck with injuries. I know many teams have. And just, you know, they've been missing Ivan Toney for half a season. Then they've been missing Joao Wissa for many weeks on end. Mbeumo now has only just come back. I heard a stat in midweek that Toney and Mbeumo have only played together for about 45 minutes this season, which, you know, is kind of, you think how key they were and how influential those two were to Brentford's campaign last season. That's hammer blows, really, to what they were. And defensively, they've been pretty unable to field a first choice team for the whole season, really. So I think Brentford will be competitive at Villa Park. But in terms of a betting proposition, I haven't actually got one on this game. I thought the prices were perhaps a little bit skewed in Villa's favour, but you know, I posted them last weekend and got my fingers burnt. So I'm not going to do so again this weekend, especially after sort of resting those players in midweek.
Trader, tipster, and four times winner of the National Lombarda Championships, Emmett O'Keefe is with us. Emmett, Villa haven't been too far shy of 2 points per game this season. Are they, in your view, despite Mark's scepticism, still on track for Champions League football?
I would
A
have my
glowing
doubt.
endorsement there.
No, it's just we're kind of seeing, I think, this to their squad issues maybe being exposed now. I think the Kamara injury, the Boubacar Kamara injury, was kind of an underrated injury, obviously because he's an excellent holding midfielder, but also I think crucially it's kind of pushed Douglas Luiz back to more defensive role. And actually, before Emery arrived, Luiz was kind of miscast as holding midfielder. I think he's a fair to middling holding midfielder and a really excellent kind of attacking midfielder. So I think they've actually got weaker at two spots by the Kamara injury and having to move Luiz back. And also just obviously he may return for the Brentford game, but if Ollie Watkins is out for any length of time, like, that is absolutely critical. As any listeners who, for the plenty of listeners out there, play fantasy football will know this, that Watkins leads the Premier League in goal involvements ahead of Mo Salah, ahead of Erling Haaland. And I think as well, he's a really complete centre forward. I think that gives Villa so much more than those bare statistics in terms of his link up play. And he's a real kind of pivot for their counter-attacks. I think, like, some of the discussions around Erling Haaland this week about his kind of general play were kind of toxic and done for kind of
effect,
done for, yeah. But I think beneath the nonsense, there is a point. I think that people who always mistrust somebody is like, oh, a striker is just there to score goals. Striker is primarily there to score goals, but can also provide huge value in the kind of other aspects of the game apart from goals. And Watkins, I think, does all of that. So obviously John Duran maybe is a decent player, but like you're going from like one of the best centre forwards in the league to a really unproven player in Duran. So
he's super raw, isn't he, Duran? There's super definitely raw. Something amazing there. Yeah. But understandably, he's a kid, isn't he? Really, relatively.
Yeah, he's one to look out for in the card markets. I think he's played something like the equivalent in minutes in terms of four Premier League matches, and he's got five cards already. And my manager at work is a big Villa fan, and he tells me reliably he's an absolute lunatic who's as liable to score as he gets sent off. So I think he's, but there's definitely a bit of kind of volatility there. And I just think as well, this could be a bad matchup for Villa in the sense of just the way Villa play that kind of high defensive line. If you were to pick kind of maybe a team that might be able to expose that, it would be Ivan Toney and Brian Mbeumo on the counter-attack. I think Mbeumo was a huge player for Brentford. I've kind of spoken about this in the past. Jonas is a good centre-forward, but he doesn't have Mbeumo's kind of linking ability and the ability to rack up assist totals like we've seen Mbeumo do in kind of previous seasons. So I think it's potentially a bad matchup. Even if Villa do make a few changes, I think this is still a weaker Villa than we're usually getting. It'll still likely be no Malik Cash. Jacob Ramsey probably won't be playing either, so I think it's kind of a good spot to oppose Villa. I'd have liked to see a kind of better performance from Brentford against Brighton in midweek, but I'm prepared to kind of leave that aside. And if you look since Ivan Toney's return, Brentford have played Tottenham, Arsenal and Man City away from home, and they've only lost by one goal on each occasion. So I think we've seen they can be competitive against the better sides away from home. So I think given that, it makes sense to kind of have them take Brentford plus one on the Asian handicap. So that gives us the insurance. If Brentford do get beaten by the odd goal, then we'll get our money back. That around 1.8 looks decent value, I think, given the state Villa in at the moment.
And finally, the Malta-based mega mind that is Mark Stinchcombe. Stinch, Brentford have gone seven without a win. We've talked about the fact that they're kind of the reverse Manchester United, aren't they, really? Because they're not getting the results that their performances deserve, whereas with United, as I'm sure we'll discuss later in the week, it's the other way round. But they do have some excellent players, and Mbeumo, Toney, as the guys have discussed. Are you confident they'll be okay? Because you look at the table and it's by no means certain.
Yeah, I think they will eventually be now that Toney is back. I mean, I say that he's been back for 12 games, but they've had to face Man City twice, Arsenal, Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea, and that game against Man United, all in those 12. So I think the fixture list has been a little bit unkind to them, and now they go obviously away to another top team. So I'd like to think that the remaining fixtures would be where they can pick up the points, and they might actually work in their favour. They have a fresh and fit Toney chomping at the bit to also get in the England squad as well, and probably angle for a move in the summer in their favour. So yes, I think ultimately they will be okay. Don't think they've got any financial issues over their head either. And given the fact you've got, you know, Forest and Everton hanging around there with any more potential point deductions. So Yeah, I think they'll be okay. And I think as a result of that, I found Villa here to be too short at 1.66, especially with Watkins a big doubt. I think even if Watkins is back, given it was a hamstring injury, I don't think he'd be able to play at full 100%. So, yeah, I'm quite happy to sort of oppose Villa. You mentioned about Brentford being the opposite to United. And, yeah, I mean, based on expected points, they're the biggest underachievers in the league with nearly 15 points fewer than they should have. You know, that's nearly, wow. that's almost five wins, basically.
that's you look crazy, at the, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, that is football at the end of the day. Low scoring game, you don't always get your just desserts. And if you're missing your best striker, then perhaps, yeah, your finishing is not going to be as efficient as you would expect it to be. Based on expected points, they're actually 10th. And yeah, they're playing the biggest overachievers in Villa in the league. The second biggest overachievers after, obviously, United. Villa got 10 more points than expected. But it's the sort of last 10-game sample of Villa that's had me slightly concerned. They're actually ranked 13th based on expected points in that 10-game sample. And if you compare it to the first 21 games of the season, before that they were the fourth best team. So I think there's clearly been a recent drop off, and it's not as if in my mind the fixture list has been too daunting in that 10 game spell. They have faced all of Sheffield United, Luton, Forest, Fulham and West Ham. And yeah, given as sort of Emmett already alluded to, Watkins is the only man in the league with double figures for goals and assists, and if he's going to be unavailable or doubtful or not 100%, then I think it's quite easy to basically back Brentford plus one on the Asian handicap at around about 1.91. Even if Brentford lose by a goal, we'll still get our money back. And I think it gives us a lot of scores on our side there.
We know injury time goals could be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bets. And now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you if the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands. Your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. Let's take it to Molineux. Wolves against West Ham. Emmett, I find West Ham to be such a puzzle because I can totally understand why their fans, you know, tearing their hair out, because some of the spells in games that they have are so reactive, so dull, because they just let the opposition have the ball. And yet the results aren't that bad.
No, they're kind of, it's kind of the reverse of last year, because last year they were in the relegation zone, but their data said they were kind of a mid-table side. But this season it's kind of the opposite, where their data suggests they should be close to relegation, but they're actually in mid-table. As Mark Sinishcombe said, that's kind of football. But I suppose when you play the style of football that David Moyes plays, you're probably a bit more open to volatility, because you're kind of taking on more shots, you're taking on more risk. So I think it's probably always going to be that way, that maybe the Moyes style of play is just going to lead to that bit more volatility.
Do they break the model a little bit, like Deitch's Burnley used to?
No, it's a good question. I was thinking about that today. We'll talk on all the cool kids who listen to Sunday's pod. I'll be discussing that about Man United in various aspects. But yes, West Ham are quite a tricky team to model because they concede so many shots. Like, so even though they're say if they're playing Burnley and they're 4 at home and they're 4-6 to win the match, they'll be conceding a lot more shots against Burnley than, say, Everton or whoever, or another team who's 4-6 to win the match as well. So they kind of can be difficult in that way. But I think Lewis mentioned this on last week's pod. I think it's captain obvious here, but like Paqueta makes such a difference to West Ham. We kind of saw that in the first half against Tottenham in midweek. Like, it's a small sample, but within the seven games that Paqueta didn't play in the Premier League this season, they only scored 5 goals. So like 0.65, 0.7 goals a game. Like in the games that Paqueta has played, the 24 league games, they scored nearly 2 goals a game. So you're going from outstanding kind of high scoring Premier League attack to kind of relegation level attack. Those numbers are a bit skewed, but I do think anyone who watches West Ham knows how critical he is to their team. But just in a general sense as well, I think like it's hard to find Premier League matches anymore where you can get over 2.5 goals at 1.8 in the exchange, given the high goal average this season. Like, both Wolves and West Ham like on the season, over six, both for both teams, over 60% of their games were going over 2.5 goals. I think one issue in terms of that recently for Wolves has been their injuries. So they've, their attacking output has really dropped off, unsurprisingly, due to Wang, Neto, and Cunha all being out with injury. But I think, but Cunha is at least back from injury. He came off the bench during the week. I think that that'll give their attack kind of a badly needed focal point. So I mentioned about the drop off from Ollie Watkins to Duran, the drop off from Cunha, who's like a 40 or 50 million pound centre forward, to some of the kind of youngsters Wolves have had to play is really significant. I think we can expect a kind of a better attacking unit in Wolves. I just think, given what we've seen from both these sides this season and the Premier League goal average at 1.8, I thought we could be getting a slightly shorter price than the 1.8 and over 2.5 goals. That's the way I'd look.
Now, with no cooperation whatsoever, Mark and Stinch came up with the same game. And you might be thinking, well, it must be an incredibly watchable, glamorous game. What have they picked out? Notts County against Harrogate. I'm sure it's going to be very good. I'm not dissing either team. Mark, you can start.
Thank you, Kev. I'm keen on Harrogate here. They are the data defiers in League Two. If you look at the performance data metrics in League Two, it's quite astonishing to see that Harrogate are pretty much bottom of the away expected points table and in the bottom three for expected goals ratio when playing away from home in League Two this season. However, if you look at the actual results, the raw results, only the top two, Stockport and Mansfield, have accrued more points when playing away from home than Harrogate Town. It's kind of mystifying, really, how good they have been away from home. Just 5 defeats all season, 8 wins, 8 draws. And I think because of their poor data, they are being routinely written off as no-hopers, really, in some of these matches where they really should be favoured more often. So last weekend, they went off as a really big price away at Wimbledon. Or I should say Good Friday. They took the lead in that game, ended up drawing the game 1-1. But they were plus one Asian handicap underdogs in that particular fixture. Again, it paid out. Then on Easter Monday, they put in their best showing of the season, really. Back at home, they absolutely walloped Gillingham 5-1, Gillingham side chasing the playoffs. Beat them 5-1. So they're in great form at the minute. And if you go further beyond that more recent run, they picked up some really strong results recently. They've been away to Barrow, they've been away to Wrexham, picked up 0-0 draws, very creditable performances. But they are a confusing team because it wasn't that long ago they got stuffed 9-2 away at Stockport either. But they have battened down the hatches.
What is it about their play then? And I'm throwing this at you, but what is it that might... We talked about the fact that West Ham are obviously a little bit difficult to model. How come they're picking up some good results, but their data's so bad? Is it the way they play?
Yeah, so there's twofold, one of which they will basically follow the David Moyes model of being quite a reactive team, playing on the counter-attack, quite happy to sit in shape and soak up pressure and play on the break. They've got some good forwards, pacey forwards, who can cause opposition defences quite good problems, especially away from home when that sort of particular tactic allows you to play in that style. But also, I mean, this is a wider point and probably something for a bigger discussion point at a different time, but I've always been of the belief, and it's been told to me as well, but the further you go down the league pyramid, the less performance data, how do I sort of surmise it? Performance data doesn't have quite the same sort of impact the lower you go down the league pyramid, because the standard of player is weaker, shall we say, than at the top tier. So, you know...
Well, that makes sense, right? A guy who's playing in League Two is not going to be as good as Erling Haaland, are they?
Exactly,
even though Roy Keane might think otherwise.
Exactly. So whilst there's a lot of merit in still looking into the same sort of numbers and statistics and whatnot, the further you go down the pyramid... perhaps the relevance is slightly weaker. So I'm always quite happy to kind of go against the market when they do have these really sort of strong opinions on certain sides, which they seem to do against Harrogate, because whilst the market has moved quite rapidly in the last 48 hours to be with them this weekend, they're still kind of going off at big-ish prices. So they're playing away at Notts County, a side who were third favourites to win the title in League Two this season after winning promotion from the National League. They came up with big hopes, big expectations. I, for one, was very much behind them. Assume they'd be top three potential. But things started to nosedive really sort of towards the end of October, early November, really, as we sort of approached the winter. It was difficult to work out. There was lots of rumours surrounding the head coach, Luke Williams, leaving the club and sort of being looked at by Championship sides. And eventually he did depart in January. He took the role at Swansea, and things have just fallen apart really since then as well. So if you look at Notts County, in the last 26 League Two matches, they've lost 16 of those. In the last 13, they've lost 9. They've only kept six clean sheets all season, and in those most recent nine games, they've conceded multiple goals on eight occasions. And the home form at Meadow Lane has been appalling. So they failed to win the last seven, five defeats in that seven-game sample, and they've conceded multiple goals on six occasions as well. All season, they've had problems facing against the best teams in the division. So you look at the home record against the top half, two wins, two draws, six defeats. And Harrogate schooled them in the reverse. They beat them 3-1 away in Yorkshire. So, yeah, I really like the look of Harrogate this weekend. 48 hours ago, we could have got them with a plus one handicap on the Asian line, which just seems unthinkable, really, considering where Notts County are right now. But, you know, that's gone. But we can still back them out against about 2.2 with a half goal start, basically the double chance to Harrogate to avoid defeat. As I said, they've only lost five away games all season. They're the third best travelling team in League Two. They're only 4 points off the playoffs. They've still got a lot to play for, and they're coming off some really, really impressive results and performance levels too against some good teams in the division, whereas Notts County are just kind of freewheeling now between here and the end of the season. They're in 16th and they're equidistant between the top seven and the relegation zone. So they're going nowhere. They're basically regrouping for next season already. So on the beach, that's probably the first mention we've had this season. I would say Notts County very much are. Happy to oppose them.
First week of April and we've had a mention of the beach already. Stinch, what drew you into the vortex of Notts County versus Harrogate?
A combination, really, of Notts County's price and just when I was trying to find a goals angle. Can you back Notts County at 8-11? I've written down absolutely not, as Mark alluded to. I think they opened sort of 8-15, 4-7. Still couldn't back them. Now they've drifted, which is a mad turnaround from the beginning of the season when I'd labelled them the best team in Europe. They're the top scorers in league.
About that.
They're the top. Well, we did quite well beginning of the season. So yeah, we did it properly. Really, we made our money and then went elsewhere when they went a bit mad. They're still a bit mad, very mad even. They're top scorers in the league, but they've got the worst defense. Like how does that happen? Like it's just absolutely mad. They averaged by far the most possession in the league as well, 65%. Yeah, they have the worst defense. Like. It's just
so
crazy.
Presumably in transition, they're just hopeless then, right? Well, when they lose, the ball.
Just to rack your brain a little bit, I think you remember seeing a clip of them in the FA Cup when
yes,
they were
was
giving
this
away
where they
goals
for fun. Three of the worst yes, goals I think I've ever go. Seen in my life. Yes. So and they've been doing that all season, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, this is a regular right. occurrence. They've also given away a whopping 14 penalties as well, which is five more than anybody else in the league.
That speaks to me of a team that, again, is hopeless in transition, because what you tend to get is defenders massively out of position, stretching to get there and then bringing guys down. I mean, it might not be all of that. They might be doing lots of boneheaded things as well. But generally, teams that can't defend in transition do you give away a fair few penalties because they're scrambling to get back?
Yeah, I think they've also been caught out trying to play out from the back at perhaps a level higher with the same sort of players. I think there's a Twitter account where when playing out from the back goes wrong, and I think Notts County are regulars.
They're in it every week.
Yes. So they're just absolutely mad, but it's all sort of justified. You know, they've got the second highest expected goals for. But they've got the third highest expected goals against. So their whopping 159 goals this season is justified, essentially. You know, averaging just short of four per game. Like, it's absolutely incredible at English football, basically. You know, when we're considering that for years and years, the 2.5 goal line has been the standard line that you would expect to see. I mean, over 2.5 goals here is 4-11. it's just mad. So given all of that, like, there's no way Notts County can be odds on. Both teams are scorers also 2-5. And I think Mark mentioned as well that Notts County have conceded at least two or more in eight of their last nine. So for Harrogate to be so big, I would say, in the market, means I wanted to try and find a way to get a goals-based bet on side, essentially, with Harrogate being so underrated, essentially. So I've put together over 2.5 and both teams to score. And if you throw in both teams to score, sorry, if you throw in a goal in both halves as well, which I think if we've got a goal expectancy of almost four, then it's difficult to have them all in one half, I would say. You get 8-11, which I think is more than backable when you consider, say, the standard over 2.5 is 4-11, so it's twice the price, essentially. But I wouldn't put anyone off looking at like the higher goal lines, you know, over 2.5, over 3, over 4.5, both teams scoring both halves. All of those sort of angles. I mean, you know, we've seen Notts County, I think they shipped 9 against Sutton, who have been bottom most of the season. That's 9 across 2 games, as Mark mentioned. Harrogate shipped 9 against Mansfield. So this could be like an over 9.5. You never know. So yeah, just goals and more goals and get against Notts County while they're odds on.
So this is going to be great fun. Emmett, forgive me for this because I'm just hurling this at you, but we've talked already on this show quite a lot about teams that seem to not make a lot of sense compared to the usual modelling and what have you, like, you know, Burnley of Deitch's era, West Ham. We've talked about Harrogate being bizarre. How often are you guys having to kind of change your modelling, think about how you might tweak it? Is it a constantly ongoing process? Like, how does it really work?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good question. I think it's for those teams, that's what kind of requires the trader input, because like the models are only kind of, they work for the kind of 90-95% of teams. But for the outliers, I suppose, that's when it kind of falls on the trading team to kind of make those manual changes. I think it's with if it's leagues like League Two, I think like, and things like match prices, the kind of market, the market will pick up on that, and they'll kind of do the work for us. Like for us as a trading team, like we're not making big opinion calls on like match prices in League Two. I think that's kind of, we're moving with the market there. But for things like shots, fouls, cards, corners, those type of things, when you have teams that are kind of producing or allowing other teams to produce against them in an outlier way, that's when it kind of would fall on the trader to try and pick up on that and make the call and kind of get ahead of the market in that way.
Constantly moving. If you thought, oh, I'm exhausted with all this glamour, I can't deal with it anymore, well, tough, it's Barrow against Swindon. Mark, take it away.
Yeah, I sound like a broken record because I talked about Barrow last weekend, last week's show, before the Good Friday game against Grimsby. They did us proud by putting on a very strong performance to win that game 3-1. But they followed up with a disappointing defeat at Morecambe on Easter Monday, but they're back at Holker Street this weekend, and that means they're worth backing yet again. They're only 175 this time around, but they're hosting a Swindon side who are pretty dreadful and pretty awful travellers. But this is more about Barrow being brilliant and at home, especially, and Swindon being appalling. So it's a nice combination, really. But as I said last week, Barrow's home record, just 2 defeats all season, 11 wins, 7 draws. But you look at their record when hosting teams below them are outside of the top 6, 10 wins, 5 draws, just the 1 defeat. I've got them 3rd on expected points at home, 4th on expected goals ratio at home. And their defensive record is astonishingly good. Just 14 goals conceded in 20 home games this season in League 2. Wow. So they are super tight. They'll need that defence to be at their best because Swindon, like Notts County really, do pose plenty of threats in forward areas. They are quite a hard and loose kind of team. They do attack you, but defensively they are abysmal. They've kept 3 clean sheets across all venues since mid-September, and they've conceded 45 goals away from home this season. They are the worst team away from home in League 2 this season. It's obviously a very long trip from Wiltshire to Cumbria. I'm not sure if they're travelling up on Friday, but if they are going up on Saturday, that's obviously
Lear
a big
Jets,
negative.
Maybe.
And their form, like Notts County, you know, they could probably possibly be described as being on the beach, although they're not quite safe yet. Very unlikely they do go down, but they're sort of teetering just on the edge there. 4 defeats from their last 5, though. They started the season so well, Swindon. They were unbeaten before October. But since then, they've returned 7 wins, 7 draws and 18 defeats. And their away record in that sample since October is 11 defeats, 4 draws and just the 1 win. So this just looks like a great opportunity to get Barrow onside yet again. I know the price won't be massively appealing to most people, but I think 175 is absolutely fantastic for Barrow. It should be closer to 166 at best.
We've covered a lot of the big hitters on the show already, so let's do something a bit more niche, a bit more obscure. Not much of a track record with it. Emma, you want to talk about a couple of smallish Italian teams, don't you? Rome Derby, something like that, I've heard.
Exactly, yeah. So I think it's kind of, there's a kind of a couple of interesting kind of manager angles here. Firstly, with Lazio, basically Lazio recently changed Maurizio Sarri, obviously the former brilliantly at Napoli with Serie A and can be struggled with Chelsea. He left recently and was replaced by Igor Tudor, who actually did quite well at Marseille last season. Marseille finished third in French Ligue 1, and it's one of those things. When the manager leaves and the team declines the subsequent season, like Marseille have, kind of Tudor's exploits there look slightly better. And then you Roma, who are kind of, they're packing kind of some of Man United storylines from the last few years into one season. They're kind of, so storyline one is obviously Jose Mourinho leaving. So Roma, yeah. Roma had that. Storyline two, you have Mourinho being replaced by a club legend like Roma did with Roma replaced Mourinho with Daniele De Rossi, like Man United did with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And then you have this kind of long, kind of vibesy winning run, kind of based on vibes and bonhomie, and everything's looking good. Like Roma have had, when Mourinho left, they were in ninth in Serie A. Now they're kind of pushing for Champions League qualification, and they've also had an excellent run in the Europa League with kind of an impressive kind of comfortable win in the tie over Brighton. But also, unfortunately, like Man United this season, they are conceding, Roma are allowing shots on goal at an alarming rate. Roma have actually allowed 105 shots in their last six matches against mediocre to bad Serie A competition, I would say. They conceded over 17 shots a game in those last six, and they were particularly fortunate not to lose their last outing against Lecce away, who are struggling against relegation. And so I think, just given that, I think there are signs that I think the Roma bubble is kind of about to burst, and they aren't maybe being that well set up tactically by De Rossi, and they've kind of outperformed their XG significantly in the 10 games that De Rossi's had in charge in Serie A. Whereas I think we might be getting Lazio at a point where they're on the improve. In Tudor's first league game, he made quite a few changed the formation, and they beat Juventus in fairly impressive style. So I think we might be, I think it's a good time, it's kind of a good time to oppose Roma. I feel like while they're slightly outperforming their data, maybe the market hasn't quite caught up to that. And also, maybe I think Lazio under Tudor, we might see some fairly significant improvement in the last part of the season. So it looks a good time for me to oppose Roma. And getting Lazio, you can if you're an exchange punter, I'd happily lay Roma on the exchange. Roma currently around 2.3. But if you're backing them on the sports book, I'd happily back Lazio drawn on bet as well.
Yeah, that does seem mega short, considering, because Roma haven't done that well against Lazio in recent years. Certainly Mourinho had a terrible derby record, didn't he? And Sarri made a real kind of real thing of really trying to push those derby wins. I remember Sarri hates the Coppa Italia, but they played Roma in the Coppa Italia. He was always moaning about the Coppa Italia. Oh, I've got players, it's not proper competition. But he said, we'll try and beat Roma because it's a derby. And that's exactly what they did. Let's take it to the Championship, North against South. Blackburn against Southampton, Stinch. What have you got for us?
Yeah, Kev, you alluded to glamour before, but I think probably the reason for maybe a bit more sort of Football League heavy this week is the fact that obviously we just had Easter. We're really getting to the business end now of the season. So there's a lot to play for. So the reason this game stood out for me is because it's a battle between two teams with quite a lot to play for. Blackburn have got relegation sort of just hovering around them. Good win they picked up, which is one of their first wins for a while. They won 5-1 at Sunderland on Easter Monday. They're 5 points clear of relegation, so still not out of the woods. And despite Southampton being 12 points off the automatics, they've got two games in hand there and still eight games to go. So still a chance they could catch the top two. But actually, I wanted to focus on the battle for the want to call it the Pichichi, but it's not the Pichichi or the Campionari. It's the top goal scorer award in the EFL.
Would it be?
Yeah, it needs a bit more of a sexy name, doesn't it? But this is first v second. You've got Sammy Schmodix on 23 goals and Adam Armstrong on 20. And I'm always excited to get involved with a goal scorer when they've got really strong shooting statistics, both averaging well over 3 per game. 3 is kind of my barometer for confidence, I would say. And they're both averaging well over 2 inside the box as well. The game is in for 3.25 goals, which means over 2.5 goals is shorter than 4-9. So we can expect lots of goals. Southampton are 5-6 faves, but they've conceded at least 2 goals in 5 of their last 6 matches. So 2 top goal scorers in the league, both to score is 5-1. So I'm quite happy to back that, because I remember back in something similar last season, or a couple of seasons ago, actually, it might have been, when Bournemouth played Fulham, coming back Solanke and Mitrovic both to score. And I think the price was similar. So given the fact that obviously we've got all these extra goals this season because of the extra injury time, I'm quite happy to back obviously the two sharpest strikers in the league, both to score at 5-1.
Our producer, Jack, by the way, suggested Pichamp. So I'll let the general populace decide whether that's the right name or not. By the way, I know I tease you all about glamour, and I know EFL fans will be going, oh, that Hatchard, what an elitist. I used to cover Forest Green in the conference, so, you know, I know all about glamour. Let's take it to France, Lens against Le Havre, Mark, and Lens with a quite damaging defeat in the Derby du Nord last weekend, so they really do need to bounce back.
Yeah, you know, they've lost back-to-back games now, I think either side of the international break, and it means they've fallen right back in the race for top three. Top three in France gets you Champions League qualifications. So I think there's 7 points adrift of the top three now.
It's a hell of a race, that. It is absolutely amazing. Like, if you told Paris, sod off, go to another league, Ligue 1 would be amazing, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Because you've got so many teams who actually could finish top if you didn't have Paris in there.
Yeah, and there's some great quality coaches in that league as well, playing some good football too. So it's a great league towards the top end. But unfortunately for Lens, they've obviously had a terrific campaign last year to qualify for the Champions League. And I thought they did themselves pretty proud in the Champions League this season. But it looks like they might not be able to play Champions League football next season, although
it's
they'll give it their best
Mark,
shot.
Mark, that they're anywhere near. When you think they lost Seko Fofana to Saudi, they lost Loïs Openda to Leipzig. I know they brought in Eliwahi, and they, you know, they've got a good pipeline there. But it's wild to me that they're anywhere near. And I can see why Franck Kerr, the coach, is being linked with some pretty big jobs, because he's just done a Herculean job. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, Lens, people may not know, but Lens, Lens town is pretty mediocre. It's not a very big town at all in the northern France region, really. But the football club are enormous, and they get sellout crowds every week, 30,000-40,000 or so. They create a massive racket. It's a huge football club in the northern region of France, and they were really sort of going down in the doldrums, really, in the last decade or so, in Ligue 2, sort of struggling to survive, really. And he has completely revolutionised that club, changed them completely. And to see them back towards the top end of Ligue 1 is really refreshing. So I'm sure they're still sort of pinching themselves, because they have been in some horrendous positions in the past couple of years. But to be towards the top end of Ligue 1 is really quite refreshing. And I sort of looked at their campaign and tried to see where they could have gone or could have improved. And really, it's those results against the top teams in Ligue 1 where they've struggled. I was quite surprised actually how bad they've been against the best teams. 1 win, 1 draw, 8 defeats against the top 5 this season. But that just means that they've been super strong and flat track bullies against the rest of the division. So you take out the top 5, they've won 11, drawn 5 and lost just once. Luckily for them, this weekend they host Le Havre at home, and you know the home record is always strong. Last season they went 10-10 when they hosted bottom half teams. This season they've won 6, drawn 1 and lost just once against bottom half teams at home as well. So they can be considered very much flat track bullies when they're playing at home. Le Havre promoted this season, had a very promising start. They'd lost just 3 times before December, but they've really plummeted since then. Since December, 9 defeats in 14. The only wins they have arrived on home soil. They've recently lost 6 of the last 7. They're right back in their relegation picture, just 1 place and 1 point above the bottom 3. obviously third place towards the bottom is plays in a relegation playoff place, but even still they're trying to sort of steer clear of that, and they're just, the goals have dried up completely. In the last eight games they've scored one non-penalty goal, which is atrocious, and away from home they've scored just 12 times all season anyhow. So this is quite a formidable prospect to go to Lons and try and get a result. They'll batten down the hatches, they'll play defensive football and see what they can get, but I just fancy Lons to be too strong for them really. They're around 1.6, 1.65 to win this game, which feels big on Lons, but you can boost that price to about 1.9 by backing Lons to win and under 4.5 goals. Only four of these two teams' combined league games this season have featured five goals or more.
Oh, hang on. Let me just take a call. Hello? Ah, bonjour. Oh. Oh, vraiment. Oh. Je suis désolé. Je suis très désolé. D'accord. D'accord. That was the Lens tourist board on the phone, Mark, complaining about you having a go, calling them mediocre. I've just had to apologise.
I've been to Lens. It's a perfectly fine little town.
No, you said mediocre. It's too late now.
It is. You know, I don't want to say it to Lens fans, but I'd much rather go to Lille for a weekend than Lens. But in terms of the football, you get much, much more of a buzz going to Lens than Lille. So, you know, can't have it both ways.
Je suis très désolé. If you want to be notified, by the way, every time there's a new episode of Football Only Better, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be able to find out when a new episode goes live for the YouTube version. Make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. I'll apologize to any French listeners for my terrible French accent and French language. It's been a long time since I did A-level. Let's switch to the EFL again. Stinch, Reading, what a mess against Lincoln. I must admit, I've not checked in with Reading for a bit, but there was all that training ground debacle where it was going to be sold to Wickham and what have you. It's a nightmare, isn't it?
Yes, it seems to me, following the news, that it's almost changing every day. The owner's going to sell, or somebody's got the money to buy. The players might get paid, they might not get paid. It seems to change every day. So with all the sort of noise, it's just easier to concentrate on what's actually going on in the pitch rather than what's going on behind the scenes. But the main reason I wanted to speak about this game is the prices are sort of 50-50. Reading 8-5 at home to Lincoln, who are 8-5. But we've got to get this Lincoln team on side right now, especially when it's chalked up at 50-50. I'm not sure if you've been following, Kev, but this Lincoln team have just been on absolute fire recently, just scoring bags of goals every week and conceding absolutely nothing. They've won 8 of their last 9. They've been winning at half time and full time 6 of 8. They're actually unbeaten in 15. They've scored 31 goals and conceded just 5. They went to Barnsley, who are, like, you know, challenging for the top six and the top two, and they beat them 5-1, I think it was. Like, they're just going absolutely mad. They've done really well in the January market. They got in Joseph Taylor from Luton on loan. He's really sort of been banging in the goals. He's got 9 in 14. So Lincoln full steam ahead, basically, for the playoff charge. And they could be lively runners to win the playoffs, basically. There is a lot of... I think it probably will be them, Peterborough, Barnsley and Bolton, and all of the other three teams seem to be very Jekyll and Hyde at the moment. So Lincoln Lincoln probably will be the biggest outsiders of the four as well, as finishing sixth normally happens. So they could be a decent bet to go up. But Reading. How do we sort of assess Reading? They're 18th. They're 6 points clear of the drop, which is pretty admirable given all the problems and the points deduction. But they have played one game more than 21st Port Vale, and they played two more than 22nd Cheltenham. So perhaps not all safe and sound for the time being. But I'm wondering, because they're not safe, and obviously that means they've got something to play for, so they're not on the beach, as we'll probably come on to in the future weeks. I wonder if actually that works in our favour, because it's sort of holding the Lincoln price up, as I expected Lincoln to be much, much closer to evens. I've watched Reading a couple of times this season against top half opposition, and what has struck me most is after both games, the players were lying on the ground, absolutely exhausted. exhausted as if they'd gone, you know, done two legs, got extra time, etc. So I don't know if there's a bit of a fixture, a fitness issue, sorry. Yeah. You look at the squad, and obviously given the financial issues and they've had to let players go, they've had seven players aged 22 and under have started 18 or more games. And that sounds, I don't know, compared to other sides, but that sounds quite a hefty chunk of young players having to play a substantial amount of games. And I wonder if that's probably the most they've played in a season at professional level, and they've still got, you know, six games to go. So, yeah, given all of that, we can basically bat Lincoln very close to evens, draw no bets. So the only way we would lose is if Reading would win. And yeah, really want to get this Lincoln team on side right now.
It's the Deitch Classico. It's Everton against Burnley. Mark, Burnley did pretty well at Chelsea, considering they had 10 men for a big chunk of it, managed to get a 2-2 draw. How do we see this going?
I think this could be quite close, quite competitive, quite nervy, considering the positions of both teams. You look at Burnley, they have been one of the sort of big beneficiaries of the points deductions for Everton and Forest, which has given them a bit of a lifeline. They looked sort of dead and buried for the most part of the season, but suddenly they are back in with a very outside shot, but still a shot of survival, which could get better if Everton do suffer more points penalties. And it could get better this weekend if they get a result away at Goodison Park. And you know, their performances have improved. Something that Emma has mentioned previously on the podcast a couple of weeks back, really, you know, not significant, but certainly incremental improvements week on week, really. I know the bar was pretty low from the start, really, but they certainly seem to have found a formula more recently. And wins are still proving very, very hard to come by, but they've been competitive for the most part and probably ought to have beaten Wolves in midweek. You mentioned that performance at Chelsea, which was excellent, really, down to 10 men and forcing 18 shots at Stamford Bridge, putting Chelsea under real pressure, twice coming back from a goal down, kind of highlighting the character within the camp, really. And they're unbeaten in four or five now. They've scored in nine of the last 12 as well since Boxing Day. No clean sheets kind of remain elusive, but you know, the performances, when sort of excluding the sort of bigger boys of the Premier League, have been decent enough. And you know, you exclude the top 12, they've won four, drawn four, drawn three, lost four, which isn't a bad return by any stretch. And if you look at their record on the road, take out their four defeats at the top four, they've posted two wins, four draws and five defeats. You know, it's not great, but they're avoiding defeat more often than not. So to me, this is no gimme for Everton, and it's been priced up for me. Everton are just too short, unattractively short for me, around about 175. And, you know, I've liked Everton. I've been with them many, many times this season and had my fingers burned. We've talked about Brentford being the sort of flip side of Manchester United, and Everton are very much in that same sort of camp, really. And but the fans have started to turn slowly against Sean Dyche, which feels a little bit harsh. Without the points penalty, they'd be a little bit further clear of relegation and in a reasonable position. But it's no wins in 13, which I think is one of their worst result runs in the Premier League of all time. Just 6 points in those 39 available. Their schedule hasn't been that unkind either. But like Burnley, they're struggling for shutouts, and goals have been really difficult to come by all season. So that for me makes them vulnerable, really, as though their slow starts, which have been a big problem. They've only scored two goals in the first half of the last 13 games, and they've only scored 11 first half goals all season. So whether it's Dyche's pragmatism or the sort of passive nature of their approach, it's putting them under pressure, really, and they're not stamping their authority on matches in which they probably were previously. So, you know, I'm quite happy to oppose them. I just think Everton at sort of 175, would you rather back Everton to beat Burnley at that price or back Burnley at 1.8 with a plus one goal start on the Asian handicap? For me, it's absolutely the latter. Getting Burnley on side, even if they lose by a one goal margin, we get our cash back. If they win, draw, we're in the winner's enclosure, really. And Everton have won by two goals or more just five times all season. They've actually only scored twice or more on eight occasions in the Premier League this season. So, you know, if they can't keep Burnley out, they need three goals or more for this bet to sink. And they've done that four times. But I think what's quite interesting is Everton have actually failed to win 22 games at Goodison Park since the start of last season when conceding a home goal. Their only nine home league wins since the start of last season have been all to nil. And if you think Burnley can score at Goodison Park, which I think they can, I think we're in a really good position with that plus one goal start.
Now it's time for the world-famous podcast Treble, a betting feature so beloved that in a recent poll of the most popular Irish personalities, Emmett actually finished above Jedward, but well below David O'Doherty. How this works is that the three guys come up with a selection ahead of the weekend's action, and lovely traders like Emmett here wrap them up for you in a boosted Treble. And Emmett, I will start with you.
I'll be mentioned in the same sentence as Jedward, but there you go. It's every
the
day
dream.
The dream. Always dreamed of it. It's a tricky week this week, but for the reasons already given, I'll go with over 2.5 goals in Wolves v West Ham.
Stinch, what have you got for us?
Yeah, I let the team down last week with Man City, but I hope hopefully we'll improve the potential profit here. I'm looking at almost trebling the overall odds after you do the multiply the odds and add the boost by throwing in Lincoln for the reasons we spoke about already.
Super. And Mark, take us home.
Let's have Barrow, please, again.
Lovely stuff. What wonderfully eclectic mix of games and teams there. Now, all of this has been very lovely. I'm sure you've all enjoyed it. But really, the whole time, there's been that voice in the back of your mind saying, when's Scott Watch coming on? When's Scott Watch coming on? When is Scott Watch coming on? It's now.
Oh, aye. It's Scott Watch.
Mark, take it away.
Yeah, so apologies, I forgot about Scott Watch last week, so we had a short hiatus, but we're back, and looking at League One, the game between Edinburgh City and Montrose, and I really like the look of goals in this game, where both teams to score is trading around 5-4, which is 225, which looks a big price on its own, really, but Montrose should prove far too strong for an Edinburgh City side who were relegated in mid-March. They've endured a horrendous season, a lot to unpack there, but they've had points penalties, sort of unpaid wages and all the other stuff, which kind of would be associated with Reading Football Club, which we've already discussed, has been applicable to Edinburgh City too. But, you know, despite kind of being down and out, and if you look at their price this weekend, they're around 16-1 to beat Montrose, which kind of tells its own story. They've got a real knack of kind of getting involved and playing their part in some high-scoring matches. So the last two games, they lost 3-1 at Celtic, but also lost 4-1 at Falkirk, who are the runaway title winners, unbeaten title winners. You look at their five games against Falkirk and Hamilton this season, the top two teams in the division by a long stretch. They've actually scored in four of those five games, which shows how capable they are in the final third. And they've actually scored in 11 of 15 home games all season. So I've got no problems with them going forward. Defensively, though, they are hopeless, and you have to underline hopeless. So one clean sheet in 31, 88 goals against. Montrose shouldn't have any problems getting on the score sheet here multiple times. They're still chasing the playoffs, but they were annihilated 7-1 by Falkirk last week. So they're eager to bounce back. They've only managed two clean sheets themselves on their travels, but already this season they've beaten Edinburgh City 5-2 and 5-1. So you look at their last eight results: 4-2, 0-3, 3-2, 4-3, 4-1, 1-1, 0-1, 1-7. So, you know, they're very accustomed to playing high scoring matches. But if this game does escalate, I expect Montrose to come out on top. But yeah, the price is 2.8 on Montrose to win and both teams to score, which is the official play, which looks a really nice price to cheer on. So that's the betting. In terms of the culture, we've done these two teams, these two places previously, so I'm kind of scrabbling around for some entertaining alternative content. So I've dug out some more sketchy facts about Scotland. So
yes,
strap yourselves in.
Wonderful, wonderful.
So we start slowly, we build up really. And the opening one is, did you know that the chicken tikka masala originated in Scotland? You may not have known that one. Did you know that the US bans the imports of haggis? The US Food Standards Agency doesn't allow sheep lungs to be used.
Why?
As an ingredient. Well, they must have their own reasons.
But it's mean. Okay, fine.
Very tasty haggis. If you've never tried it, I'd give it a go.
Okay.
Did you know that Scotland once tried to establish a colony in Panama, of all places? That was because back in the 1690s, they were attempting to build a precursor to the Panama Canal, basically linking the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. But so wow, spectacular was the failure of this project that it almost bankrupted the whole country.
That was
and finally, the best
work.
finally the best, and the conclusion of Scott Watch. Did you know, you probably did, but did you know that the highest proportion of redheads are found in Scotland? It's actually true. Less than 2% of the global population has red hair, but in Scotland, the percentage ranges from 6 to 13%. Now, red-haired people can manufacture vitamin D more effectively due to their genetic ability, and the vitamin D is necessary for healthy bones, teeth, neurological systems, and the immune system as well. So basically, redheads need less time and sun exposure to produce vitamin D, which obviously gives them advantage in cold, grey locations like Scotland over blonde, dark-haired people. But Scotland started a DNA initiative to count all redheads in the country and found 650,000, or one in eight. But experts say 1.6 million Scots possess the red-haired gene, and Edinburgh is the red-headed capital of the world.
Wow. So there you go. That needs to be on the tourist board, doesn't it? Viva the redheads, viva the redheads. Lovely stuff. What a brilliant way to end the show. And that is the end of this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, we've got the Sunday show, as Emmett alluded to. All the cool kids listen to or watch the Sunday show. Only the dweebs just listen to this one. You have to listen to both, all of our shows on our new YouTube channel for non-racing content. So make sure you like and subscribe if you don't want to miss any shows, and lots of good preview content on our website, betting.betfair.com. From Emmett, from Stinch, from Mark, from all of the redheads out there, and from me, it's goodbye for now.